Aside from our own hothouse, there were no signs that the sexual revolution was on its way.
Novelist Jane Hamilton.
The Catholic girls in their plaid skirts and knee socks and loafers, their sprayed hair and black eye makeup, moved in an impenetrable herd on their way to school. None of the mothers could have been temptresses, none of them the type to have illicit sex leaning against laundry chutes or in commuter trains, no falling backward into swimming pools at a cocktail party for the squaws of 400 Grove. Our large, soft, graying mothers rang their bells and called one continuous name, Kevin, Dorothy, Stacy, Peter, Michaeline, Patrick, Chrissy, Susan. It seemed to me that that was what most mothers lived for, to call and call day after day. They'd sent their children out to play and wanted them back. They didn't seem to be reading The Feminine Mystique or The Second Sex out of curiosity, as Julia McIver was, weren't becoming enraged about their subjugation, raising their fists and storming the streets like the women in New York City. They weren't inventing consciousness raising, and they weren't either mending or cleaning or cooking. They were calling for us. Up and down the alley, they were so comfortably unattractive and worn that now, in my mind's eye, they have a sheen that is something like beauty.
It's novelist Jane Hamilton reading from a new book called When Madeline Was Young. Steve Paulson sat down with Jane Hamilton to talk about the varieties of nostalgia, especially literary nostalgia.
I like to think that it's a type of nostalgia, the kind where, you know, you're looking back and you realize that things have a certain rosy tint to it, and you've inserted yourself into that rosy-tinted picture, but you know you're doing it. So somehow it's more legitimate. you know, I mean, I think there are several flavors of nostalgia. You have the kind where you simply insert yourself into a Norman Rockwell picture, and it, of course, didn't happen that way. So there's a certain amount of sentiment involved in that and a lie to your own past.
Well, I want to pursue this idea of nostalgia because I know for a lot of writers, that's a dirty word. You know, it conjures up sentimentality, maybe schmaltz, and some people will want to run a million miles away from that.
But I do think, you know, in thinking about all the books that many of the books I love, I have to think that nostalgia is a great propelling force, or at least a little part of the kernel that is part of the reason the book comes into being. I think there are a few books that perhaps were not written with nostalgia in mind. For example, The Things They Carried. I don't think Tim O'Brien has any sense of longing for the war, and he's writing that book out of a pure sense of outrage. But most books I can think of really have, at least the books I love, there's a sense of deep longing.
And if you didn't have a miserable life, especially when you were growing up, I mean, how can you not look back fondly and probably at times romanticizing about
Absolutely.
Some things that happened
Absolutely.
Before?
Absolutely. But then, you know, there's the Proustian kind of nostalgia where you're looking back to suffering and you realize that when you suffered, it was the greatest time of your life. And you were never as alive then, now, as you were then. So there's that kind of nostalgia too, sort of glorifying the bad times.
Does that resonate at all for you?
To me, I have experienced, I think, what is probably the saddest kind of nostalgia, and that is where you were young. In the moment, your experience was very, very beautiful, and then you grow up and you look back and you realized you were an absolute idiot to have enjoyed what you were enjoying at that time. And so it's kind of like a reverse nostalgia. The beautiful thing has become sullied, not because it was a bad thing or because you've learned something that was a secret then or anything. It's just that you're wiser and you realize that instead of going out with a beautiful boy, you should have been reading Catullus or, you know, spending your time in a way that would have had a benefit for the years now.
I don't know if you've had this experience. I actually, a couple of years ago, I was sort of thinking a lot about this, and I was thinking, you know, I want to contact some of these people, some of my really good friends back from grade school. I went back and I looked a couple up, and it was fun to see them, but it didn't really click.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's something a little unsettling about that.
There is, and I think that you know each other really well in a certain way, and you have this shared pool of memories. And so if you get together for a short time, you completely go back into that time and revisit everything, and it's touching and it's funny. But it's very difficult then to carry that new relationship forward. In my experience, it tends to just fizzle out. And yeah. So there you are with this kind of crystallized relationship, and it's there in the museum.
I'm curious about your take on this idea of nostalgia and how this is figured into other books that you've read, other books that you've appreciated over the years. Are there particular scenes or passages that really stand out to you?
Well, one of my favorite books, and one I go back to kind of every year, is Who Will Run the Frog Hospital by Laurie Moore. And there's a last moment in the book that I think is an example of the best and purest kind of nostalgia, and that's where you experience something beautiful and it remains beautiful and you remember it clearly and you can never get back. There was an April afternoon when I was in the 10th grade that the girls' choir had to meet for its final rehearsal before the spring concert. The sun was pouring in through the gym windows, and when we took our places on the bleachers, we were standing in it, like something celestial lowered in. Our director, Miss Field, began to wave her arms at us, and a strange spell came over our throats. Our nerves tightened, and all the bones of our ears fell in line. It was Miss Field's own arrangement of a Schubert rhapsody, and the notes, for once, took flight. Couldn't catch Syl's eye. She was standing over with the sopranos, but it didn't matter. I didn't have to, because this wasn't personal. This singing, this light, this was girls. After weeks of rehearsal, celebrating the ethereal work of their voices, the bell-like, bird-like, child sound they could still make so strongly in unison. Strung along the same wire of song, we lost ourselves. Out of separate rose and lavender mouths, we formed a single living thing, like a hyacinth. It seemed even then a valedictory chorus to our childhood and struck us deep in the brain and low in the spine, like a call, and in its wave and swell lifted us, I swear, to the ceiling in astonishment and bliss. We sounded that beautiful. All of us could hear it. Aloft in the midst of it, no boys, no parents in the room, no one else to tell us, though we never managed to sound that beautiful again. In all my life as a woman, which began soon after and not unrichly, I have never known such a moment, though sometimes in my brain I go back to that afternoon to relive it, sail up there again toward the acoustic panels, the basketball hoops, and the old oak clock, the careful harmonies set loose from our voices, so pure and exact and light, we wondered later, packing up to leave, how high and fast and far they had gone.
Wow. And I suppose when you really think about nostalgia in its purest form, it does have this double-edged quality.
It does.
So wonderful, but such tremendous loss, too.
Such loss. Oh, it's just awful.
Well, it raises interesting questions about the role of memory, then, because you don't have to go back and remember this stuff. We don't have to in our regular lives. But
yes, but if you're in your car and you're listening to the radio and Barry Manilow comes on, you know, oh, Mandy, oh, you came. I mean, there you are. You're back in seventh grade. You can't help it.
Jane Hamilton's new novel is called When Madeline Was Young. Steve Paulson spoke with her.